Hey everybody, my name is Les, known as Sports Talk Les, and welcome to Reality Table. I also want to welcome you to House of Alisu.
Forget about that he said and that she said. Tell me what the street said. Got them tuned in, they running back. Just like a DJ. What you bring to the table?
Welcome back, season 4 of the Reality Table. I got my very, very special guest co-host, well, they're permanent co-hosts, whatever you want to call them, Mr. Stevie Bags, Mr. Shannon Brown.
What's happening?
How y'all doing today?
Excellent. How you doing, Lex?
Chilling.
Alexia Adams.
I'm chilling.
AKA Big Lex.
The biggest.
You chilling?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm excited about this one, Lex.
Yeah, me too.
Oh my goodness. We got some fire in the building.
Fire. You bring them in.
Listen, okay, let me just start off by saying this. This brother is so conscious and so aware. And I want y'all to make sure you buckle your seatbelts, man. He's not just a musician. He's not just a father. I don't even know this. I'm just saying this. This man is a humanitarian. I'm talking about giving back to the people for real. Man, y'all better show some love for Big Gilt, man. Show some love for my brother Gilt, man. You know what I'm saying? And then we're going to circle back around. Now we're going to take this thing overseas, man. You feel me? All the way to Russia. Russia. They used to call it the USSR. You know what I'm saying? And my girl, Les, she's so gracious. I met her organically through my brother 2 weeks out. Shout out 2 weeks. Jason Lobdell. I seen him on the podcast and I started looking at some of the things you're doing. I got to tell you, I salute what you're doing. Being a former pro athlete, it's only right that we had you on the couch so we can talk this
still
reality.
Still an athlete. I'm not a former pro athlete.
Well, I
still do it all.
The more I know what I don't know. So just teach me. You know
bars,
what I'm saying? Yeah, just teach me, baby.
You know, 20 bars.
At any rate, this is an exciting conversation. We talking about the old versus new Atlanta. And man, it's up. We got the best in the building to talk about it. I know that, especially the old Atlanta.
Yeah.
We know, he knows something. So Lex, can you kick it off with a question or whatever? Or you want me to go ahead and talk to the people or what I want to talk about?
I mean, listen, it's your show right now. Go ahead, do it.
The only reason I'm saying that is because, okay, of course, Shannon played NBA, pro basketball, pro football. Were you a pro?
No.
Okay. So
but I play tennis. I have this whole stance on pro because it doesn't, for tennis, you are pro when you play tournaments and you earn money for it. I did play in college.
Okay.
So, and I can still compete with pro players. I just never earned money for it.
Okay.
But I'm still an athlete. I don't think you don't consider yourself an athlete.
Well, no, I ain't say athlete. I said pro. I'm just saying pro because it is a level to it. It's another level. Yeah. Like he's pro in music. He's a pro. It's a lot of people that ain't never, they rap all day, but they ain't never did what he did.
Right.
So the only reason I was trying to make a distinction there is because of what it takes to be to that level, even at a collegiate level. You know, there's still a level of discipline and stick-to-itiveness that you got to have to be great and to make it to that level. So I just want to kick the door in by, like, how did you all transition from growing up, doing what you were doing, to being where you are now? And, Gil, I'll start with you, brother.
Me personally, man, I started out with Organized Noise. So I was with Ray Murray. So one day we got a call. Rico called us up to DeLo. He said, man, come up here and check this group out. We got up there. It was Torn and Drake. Yeah. The reason why I use this is because we didn't really go pro until we met Outkast and we started putting their album together. Mm-hmm. Once we started putting their album together, that's when we understood that we had to figure out what we were going to represent, figure out what the music was going to represent, and figure out where we were going to stand in this music game that at that time was dominated by New York. So for me, shit, I went pro. First album you ever heard Gearball was Parental Advisory, a song with me and Pimp C called Dope Stories.
Damn.
So I went pro in 1993.
Wow.
Wow.
That's love. No, but that's hard. And the fact that you and Pimp did that, it makes sense because he was a very conscious brother. And he really talked out against the establishment a lot. And so I love Pimp for that. What about you? When did you know, like, I'm going to take this thing serious? Tennis-wise?
Well, so with me, I actually retired from tennis 3 times. I retired when I was 14, I retired when I was 21, and then 25, and then I said, I'm going to pick it back up and I'm going to go the hardest I possibly can. The problem with going pro with tennis is that it's the most expensive sport to play. It's not even golf, it's tennis. And when you don't have the money to travel, when you don't have the money to pay for coaches or PT, you can't compete. So I never had the money to do it. So now when I have a corporate job, you know, I have some sort of social media presence, I have connections and I have access to coaches and to facilities. Now I can go as hard as I possibly can because I can rely on myself and I'm backing myself up with tennis. And so now I'm going the hardest I possibly could. I train like at least 10 hours, 12 hours a week. Mm. I might play some tournaments here too. And I'm 30. So it's like, it's kind of unheard of when you are trying to go and do something when you're 30. But at the same time, like everything that I do, you know, corporate too, because again, I'm from Russia. There's no such thing as, nobody can even imagine working in corporate because it's like, we don't have that back there. Like there are corporates, but it's not the same as America. Mm. So just that alone, you know, going to school, like figuring out that it takes, you know, it's just, you have to be resilient. Like the job, I just started this new job. I've been trying to get into that building for 8 years. 8 goddamn years, and I finally got this job. Wow. So it's like,
wow. Congrats. Yeah. Congrats on that.
It's just, you have to be resilient. And sometimes the doors are going to close in front of you. They're just going to shut in your face. Because again, for me, it was always money. And the reason why I'm doing everything that I'm doing now, having a podcast, having social media presence, is because there are people who are like me, and I can give them that support to say, hey, you can still keep going. Don't give up. Like age is just a number. It doesn't matter if you're 20, if you're 30, if you're 15, you can still keep going. So the end goal is to build a foundation so I can support those people financially, because that's like, money should never stop you from doing things or becoming professional or just being yourself or being great.
Absolutely. I love that. I love that. What you got, Lex?
Yeah. Ooh, that was tough. That was tough. What's the question again?
No, I was just asking them, you know, when do they take their professionalism?
Okay.
What
you do now. Yeah. I think if we going into sports, I just never wanted to go home. So if basketball was over, I would go jump on a track team. Track over, season come around, I go jump on a volleyball team. I just like people. But I was good in all of them. Had Division I offers for all of them. I think when basketball was over, I just got tired of traveling. I got tired of being on a new team every year. I got tired of seeing my friends get married, having kids. I was one of the last to still play. I'm like, man, it's over with. And then I think when I finally retired, I actually found out who I was as a person. Well, I knew who I was, but now I applied what I learned in sports to business. Mm-hmm. And then I knew, well, you know this, but I knew last year that I took it serious when I quit my job. And I've been corporate for 7 years, going on 8. And then I set it up to where my brother, you know, I brought him into the office and now he has my position. But I think it took me maybe to go through 30 people of fucked up friendships to see, like, let me count on myself. Let me bank on myself. And it gave me passion to want to do stuff for myself that I gave all them the passion for. You know, because sometimes when you don't feel like you're appreciated or it's reciprocated. I was telling Shannon this the other day, like, when you don't feel like it's reciprocated, you're going to feel a way. Whether it be your energy, you're not going to have the same energy in the room. I always tell Bags, I always wish, like when we go to Vanity, that he comes because he gives me another energy just to even be out. I'm at this point where I don't want to be out like that. But if I'm around certain people, it's time to go out. Like, it's time to have a good time with my friends. Mm-hmm. But I think that for me, it took till I was 37. And that's being hard because I started working when I was 31. So any other job I had in between, because I was a hustler. So when I was in college, I went to Albany State, go to Rams, salute, go to Rams. But I was working at the Sand Trap. You heard of the Sand Trap? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to work for Gilbert. I was the waitress and the bartender. I was working at Steak and Shake and Hip Hop Fish and Chicken. Then I quit those two jobs when the trap was called the trap. Sand Trap started bringing in trap and money. You know what I'm saying? Bringing money, like money, not nothing else. So basically, I always had a job. In the summer, I would go work at Finish Line. Like, I just always had to have some money. And coming from a Division II school, we weren't really getting money like that. We was trying to get as much pale as we can get. You know, some people have been just taking out loans just to have money. But I think for me, when it came to just finally being able to shift to business and just rely on myself was last year. And it took a lot of hurt to make that happen, because they're the reason they gave me motivation to do what I'm doing. Yes. You know, that's why I can say I can never work for somebody else anymore.
Wow. Yeah. What about you, Shannon? I mean, make it to the NBA. You know what I'm saying? That's one of the toughest sports on the planet.
Man, I started taking basketball serious at a young age, man, probably about 6 or 7. Used to go to the gym and get it in, but just for the sake of name dropping, like Michael Jordan, like, you know what I'm saying? That's who I seen. That's who I grew up watching. I'm from Chicago. I watched all six of them championships. I seen the first three. I seen him retire, go play baseball, and then come back and do it. And like I told y'all earlier, like, I'm a dreamer. Like, I got premonitions, prophecies, and all that. I was like, man, 8, 9, 10 years old, I seen myself in the NBA. And after that, it was just about me doing the work to go get it. So I stayed in the gym all the time. So I started taking basketball serious at a young age, and it all worked out for me.
Wow.
But let me tell you this. I thought like that, too. I thought like that. Penny Hardaway, I was trying to mock my game after him and everything. But once you get to college, you start to see the numbers go down. You know what I'm saying? Once you start really trying to get into your field, because I did everything. 3 practices a day, I can't change my height at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I'm 5'4", and if I go somewhere, it's off of defense. Mm-hmm. I knew at that point where I was going, because I'm like, I'm a kid, I'm going to the W. You can't tell me I'm not going in college. You know, it's because of the circle, too, that I was around. Like, my coach felt like basketball was over after college. I just knew it wasn't. I said, it's something out here. That's mm-hmm. how I found a semi-pro team. It's something else out here. That's how I got on Atlanta Dream practice team. It's something else out here. That's how I go overseas. Mm-hmm. From being on a practice team. But I wish I was 5'10 or 5'6", 6'2". I wish.
But you got to bedroom yourself, though, because
no, for sure.
People are going to tell you, you can do this, you can do. I mean, I was never even promised to even end up in this country. Like, people can't. I haven't seen my family in almost 10 years. Like, right. That's the sacrifice I have to make. Like, I have to give up a lot of stuff. I get up at 5 in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to do this, this, and that. And, like, I don't have time for certain things, but that's just, you have to bet on yourself.
That's what the hell I did.
People tell you, you were too short, you were too this, you're too that. Okay, but so. Listen,
betting on myself was what I did, because I went to go play where nobody else would do semi-pro. And then I went to go be on a practice team. That's not heard of, that you get picked up from a practice team.
Yeah.
And then I was able to invest in myself to go overseas, because my first contract was trash. Like, beyond standard.
It doesn't matter.
But
you did
but
it.
What I'm saying is, that's why nobody could tell me no. So once I had a great year, I ended up getting picked up on another team, was the captain of that team. He let me pick my teammates.
Yeah.
So I was able to help people get jobs. Like, it's nothing to be able to pay somebody to do something. Like, I can honestly say, I pay people. You know what I'm saying? I've been doing this since I was playing.
Yeah.
You know, so I get it, but.
And that was the gift. That was what you went through to get to where you were at. Because, like, but when I look at, you know, all of our stories. I don't have to go through mine, because I think we get the point. Mm-hmm. You got to have resilience. You got to have stick-to-itiveness. You got to fight the no's to get to that one yes. Mm-hmm. So, and whatever. I mean, I played on 11 teams in 10 years as a pro. 11 pro football teams. 5 NFL, 5 CFL, 1 arena team. But I knew that all of those trials and tribulations were just an opportunity for me to be who and what I am right now.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying? And so with that being said, Gil, you know, old Atlanta. Mm-hmm. You know, can you tell me socially, what is the difference between the social energy in Atlanta from what you remember back then and what it is now?
There wasn't no telephones. Mm. Wasn't no telephone. Most of it was beepers. And that was the streets with those. You know what I mean? But everybody was kind of like locked in as a culture. Like, everybody really paid attention to each other differently. Like, you know, if you really liked the girl, you know, you started off writing notes on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Trying to get, hey, shot to take that, get that number right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You didn't really work. Like, hit me before 8 o'clock now, you know, dinner time, I'm gonna goddamn cut the phone off. Right? You know what I mean? Like, it was just a real thing. You got to really build a relationship with a girl, and you and your homeboys really got to build a relationship with camaraderie. Like, we really stayed outside all day, like, shit, what are we gonna do now? We said, let the goddamn take the bikes up to the top of the hill, take the chain off, and just see who can make it to the bottom.
Right.
You know what I mean? Or just try, let's try and ride a skateboard down a long hill, see who can stay on there the longest. It was like, everything was about testing you in manhood, testing you.
Right of passage.
And you know, yeah, it was almost like, man, you ain't gonna hang with us unless, you know, we might steal something out of the store now. You might not. Just hold the dough, y'all. You know, it was just a lot of things that little boys, you know, went through to teach each other, like, how far we gonna go. Like, it's been plenty of time, like, that little scene of it in Boys in the Hood when he say, hey, dough, let me out the car, dough.
Right.
Let me out the car. I've been in that situation.
Yeah.
Well, I knew I was like, man, old boy gonna goddamn trip, man.
Yeah.
Old boy gonna trip. So let me out of the car. I already know this ain't gonna end well. I just think during those times, you really had a chance of understanding the relationships between everybody you was in the house with, your mother, your father, your grandmother. You really respected family.
Right.
And I just think that now, when you go and sit down at most people, or you go into most restaurants, you look at everybody, they looking down their phone. Mm-hmm. You're like, ain't nobody really connected like they was back then. Like, I remember going to Jelly Beans, and I might see Dallas Austin. I might see Toon, and we'd be like, damn, there go them guys. But at the same time, it was still about that culture of Atlanta, learning about everybody that was going. And it was special in Atlanta because you had all of the kids who were the children of the freedom fighters, like Buzzy, you know, Maynard Jackson's son. You had Andrew Young's son.
Snick.
You had everybody. So you had so much culture going on. And I got to tell people all the time, Atlanta was different, bro. I never went to school with nobody but us. All my teachers always looked like me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I never felt inferior. I never felt like it was nobody else bigger than us in Atlanta. And I think that that's the difference of what old Atlanta presented, because old Atlanta was about tradition, was about respecting the elders. And even if it was some street business, you've seen the difference between Andrew Young and Jose Williams.
That part.
Jose represented the streets.
That part.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you saw that, yeah, it's all kind of things going on, but it's rules and regulations, and there's chiefs and captains in control to keep everybody at the right temperature, structure. And I think that after the Olympics came, I think that's when Atlanta lost the true Atlanta, because now we opened our city up to the world. So everything changed, you know. More people came here. I started seeing Arabs. I'd never seen Arabs before. I was seeing black people, bro. I only seen a real Mexican when I went Yuba Highway. But in 2025, you might see a Latino or Mexican on the south side at the churches giving you chicken. You're like, damn, I ain't never seen that before. That's new.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I'm just saying how Atlanta itself was an incubation of making us feel like we were superior and making us feel like it was no racism and we didn't understand limitations. What's limitations?
All right.
When I'm looking at, when I can actually see Cameo, I can actually see Curtis Mayfield. The girl that started SOS Band, she used to work at Greenbride. The first time I bought my rap album, she was standing at the counter. Mm. So when she winded up being the SOS Band, I was like, wow, I could do it too.
It just gave you the vision.
And having Hank Aaron in Southwest Atlanta. Like having that man where he stayed across the street from the dungeon. So just imagine once we moved from Lakewood and moved on Adams Drive, and we all outside, we happy, we had moved up to Weezy. Right. But then he walked down to the end of the driveway and said, hold on, Charlie. We ain't gonna have all these cars out here and these motorcycles, and you really haven't. Damn, that Hank Aaron. And he checking folks.
Got respect.
You right, sir. It's like, I don't think the old Atlanta, and once the Olympics came, I just think the respect level for the elders and the traditions that were laid down, it started changing.
Wow. That's serious. That's a great, great perspective. When you think of Atlanta, just real quick for you, because I think I want to go around with all this. When you think of Atlanta right now, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Shit, Dungeon Family, man.
Hey, say that. What about you, Les? When you think of Atlanta, you being new, you represent New Atlanta. You've been here for a couple years, I think. When you think about Atlanta, what comes to mind?
First of all, it's so green. And I think about like golf courses and like tennis courts, like sports. Mm-hmm. Atlanta had my heart when I came here, when it was April when I came here, and it was so green. And I was like, wow, that feels like home. Because to me, I'm from Siberia. So, and by the way, everything you're saying, That's why I actually relate so much to Atlanta, because in Russia, we grew up with the same values. Like, you respect your elderly. I didn't grow up with a phone. So my first internet was 2004. So I don't, yeah.
And just like, he ain't see no black people. You ain't see no white people. I mean, no white people. You didn't see any black people. Right, right.
But it's also like the same culture. Like, you know, you're going to go ride the bikes up there. You're going to go figure it out. You're going to go like, and I was going to ask you, like, were you, did you have a dream? Like, oh, I want to grow up and be somebody.
At that time, baby, in Atlanta, wrestling was so big. Grandmama used to take me down to Channel 17, man. I used to get to see Ric Flair and all that up. That's what I wanted to be.
Dusty Rhodes, yeah. Them boys like that. Yeah.
I heard that, though.
It was just like, I wanted to be a wrestler, really. When it was like, before anything, it was a wrestler. And Burt Reynolds.
See, now you're going to go around, you're going to ask people, what's your dream? Who do you want to become? They're, oh, influencers and TikTokers, but they don't actually have a real dream.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between, I guess it's just generational difference. But when I came to Atlanta, I just felt that warmth that it had. Like, South was just so, like, I felt like, wow, I know it's Black Hollywood, but it also felt like home. I'm like, this just, and I remember I told my mom, I was like, this just reminds me of home because of the trees, like the greenery, going to the parks. It's like, it just felt special. I don't know.
That's
dope. It's just very warm.
That's dope. What you say, Shannon? What you
think? Me being from Chicago, when I came to Atlanta, or like all we used to hear about was the Freak Nick and the strip clubs.
Yeah.
That's all we used to hear about. Freak Nick and Magic City, Allure, Follies, Blue Flame, like a number of them. So that's like when I think of Atlanta, like that's the first thing that come to mind. Like that's all we used to hear about. Man, they going to Atlanta for the Freak Nick. They going to Atlanta. For the Freak Nick. That's all I used to hear about. So then I got a chance to see a little bit of the culture when I moved here. But I mean, I like Atlanta so much, man. It got a lot of diversity. So I appreciate the time, you know, that I spent here for real.
Yeah, that's real. I remember being like 12 and coming up here from Florida, and we was driving through during Freak Nick. And I'm talking about, you see people on 285 running butt bunking naked. You know what I'm saying? Then I seen a sister at the mall get her clothes, you know, snatched off of her. I seen it. And then it made sense to me. A couple years later, I found myself going to Bethune-Cookman. And we used to have Black Beach Week, BCR, Black College Reunion. Same thing. It was just the same thing, but in Florida. And that culture, when I used to think about Atlanta, I thought about that. But the first thing I thought about was just melanated excellence. Just you always knew somebody who looked like you that was up, whether it was corporate, sports, whatever. Like, when I thought of Atlanta, I thought, man, progression for melanated people, especially being from Florida, you know? Like, now being here for so long, I see the difference in the spirituality and the consciousness of people that are even drawn to this place from all over the world. When it's a melting pot of consciousness for me. I don't see what everybody else sees, like, with the streets and the violence and the, whatever. Yeah, I know it's there, but I see the other side of that. So, yeah, what about you, Lex?
I think I always thought of, when I think of Atlanta, music and sports.
Yeah.
No matter where it came from, Dungeon Family, Goody Ma, Outkast, Jeezy, T.I., you know, we have down a list, you know.
Mm-hmm. Nah, for real.
Over the shot. And I'm saying.
She tried to shoot that shot. Yeah.
But I also, let me tell you this. So playing sports in Atlanta, the athletes knew the entertainers, the rappers, singers. The singers knew all the athletes. So me coming up, I was like the little T.I. It's like he kind of invested in athletes. I wasn't one of them, but it was the guys. So everybody that came to our school came from that little group, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So when we got older and got to college, we'll be in those groups because they watched us since we were in high school. So when it's not abnormal when you see Lou Will and Bow Wow were best friends, because that's how it started with everybody. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? So I think when I think of Atlanta, it was sports, but it was always the sports meshing and missing with the musicians.
Wow.
I don't even think growing up I had a specific just group that I thought of when I thought of Atlanta. I just thought of, I guess you could kind of say home, because I'm not from Atlanta. I'm from Jacksonville. That's but cool. I've been here since I was 7. And this is home for me. Like, I can't live nowhere else.
Same. The first celebrity I met in Atlanta was Usher. I walk into Starbucks and Usher was there, and I was like, "Yo, this is insane! What is going on?"
Yeah, that's the thing about the age, for real. You can run into anybody.
You run into so many celebrities. Like, you literally can be in the same restaurant. Just, you know, I was Travis Scott was in the house the other day. You know, it's like all of them at the house. Yeah,
oh.
The steakhouse.
Oh,
at house.
House.
Oh, the house. House.
The steakhouse. Yeah. You go to St. Regis, you're going to run into, like,
no,
so many people.
That's facts.
She was trying to be messy, talking about at the house. At church. She thought she said
my house.
Yeah.
No, Travis Scott was not at my house. He will not be at my house. That's a reel right there. Yeah. I mean, you know.
No, I think for sure. I'm like, the house.
Not Travis Scott, maybe other people, but then it's another day.
That's another topic, Ms. Royce.
Yeah, I think it'd be, it's not even that you just see somebody 9 to 10, we probably know them. That's how it's 1 degree of knowing somebody in Atlanta. This is like a big high school. Don't do something. Let me find out. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's how it is.
What's that?
What do you think about Atlanta?
Well, no, I mentioned it. I thought about melanated excellence and just people who look like me that represented something on a grander scale, even outside of running up and down the football field. You know what I mean? You have major people who were doing major movements here in Atlanta. One of my mentors, rest in peace, is Tommy Dortch. Tommy Dortch was like the mayor of Atlanta unofficially, and he did so much for HBCUs. I mean, I've spoken at every HBCU in the nation because of him, because he gave me an opportunity. He saw something in me, and he's like, man, you remind me of me when I was young, coming up, trying to give people information and knowledge. And so people like him is what Atlanta is all about. You know what I'm saying? But now, when you think about a lot of this stuff now, the each one teach one, and reaching back to Gil's point was like, the young people don't want to get the information that the old people don't want to give it. And so now that's what this reality table and platforms are about, to really bridge that gap. Again, to really show people what it looks like to really be an example of what you want to see in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, right. So that's what it is to me. I love having these conversations about social, economic, spiritual, political, because I think you can start chopping away at the fallacies that we've been given and start talking about the reality. And that's why we at the reality table.
Listen, what you bring to the table?
That's what I'm bringing to the table, man. You know what I'm saying?
You bring spirituality.
I got a question. How would you compare this Atlanta versus the old Atlanta when it comes to the music? Do you feel like more people are one-hit wonders? They just make a little beat? Because I'm about to get in the studio tomorrow. And I feel like I can get discovered, you know? So I'm just saying, I've been supposed to go for about a week now. So it's like, what do you think about it? Do you think it's more easier, or it's easier to get noticed now compared to back then?
I just think it's easier to just get seen. Mm. To be an artist, it takes years to develop that. Right. Just like y'all being ball players. And I just think that, the difference between now and then is that you're actually being able to watch the artist become an artist in front of your face, instead of it being polished when it get in front of your face. And I think with it being like that, I think you're going to have a bigger percentage of people not making it and a smaller percentage of people making it. Mm. And I think right now, back then we didn't have the luxury of being able to look at other people's looms and other people's studios and hear what they doing. You had to understand who you were and had the confidence to do that without being able to look over there and see what G's of them doing or see what T.I. them doing. And I think that's the advantage. And I think also, I think that's the detriment to the actual industry right now, is that kids are not using their imagination like we had to,
right?
To the fullest extent. I think you have more fans doing music than actual artists in this time and day.
That makes sense.
What about longevity? Do you think they're going to stay?
Longevity, that's what I mean. Like, the difference between us is Goody Mob own all our music. These kids come into a business now where they own your face, your music, and everything about you for eternity. So tell me, if you're not really an artist, it's not built for you to survive now. Because now you can have a hit record, and then they can say, well, we're not interested in your music anymore. But you know what? You can do a Gatorade commercial. Mm-hmm. You know what? You can do a Chips commercial. So now it's not even about your music. It's about, do they think you're a product that could be put by other products?
Your product.
Yeah. That brand got to be able to move in different areas.
Well, you got to look at it. And when we came in the game, it wasn't about no brand. It was about an artist.
That part.
Now it's about a brand.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, but how does a kid that's coming from nothing understand and get the knowledge to maintain the brand?
Right.
After you learn, you already caught.
That's right. That's facts. But I think when you got real true artistry, real true ability and talent, you can eat forever. When you just pop up and you get a nice song and you haven't cultivated the artistry of what you do, then you gotta depend on the machine to push you.
Well, I give you an example. In our days, it was a few of us. In this time of day, it's two.
Right.
It's Cole and it's Kendrick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's be real. If you put them in the room with the Futures, you won't even pay attention to that.
Right.
Because that's the generation we.
Yeah.
But in our generation, more of the crowd would have looked at us instead of looking at this.
Yeah.
But in this generation, they're going to look at this more than this. Because at the end of the day, it's about how it looked to these kids. They can respect you, but only how you present yourself. That's the difference between when we were children, it didn't matter what an adult looked like. He was an adult. She was an adult. So if they said something to us, we listened and we learned. In this time, they first thing kid gonna do is look at your shoe, look at your drill.
No, yeah.
Let me check that rear. Watch out there and check that neck. All right, OG, what's up?
That part. No. And again, to your point, if you're not stamped by pop culture, I say this all the time. If you don't have a European car, a European degree on your wall, European money in your pocket, or a European woman, your people won't listen to you. And that's just what it is because, or you were European shoes on your feet, right? Like you have to be stamped by pop culture in order for most young people or any people now to really want to receive you. And I think that's because whoever controls images controls the mind. Whoever controls the mind controls the actions, right? And so what's important now is not the actual word. What's important is that if you look like you got the word, that's why you go on the ground right now, you see people who say they gurus at something. And they pull up in a Rolls Royce or a Bentley, and now they got people going to a course, and they get to the course, and they didn't learn a motherfucking thing from the course because you just got caught up in the Bentley or the Rolls Royce. You know what I'm saying? So that's real. That's real.
That's the culture we're in now, and that's the culture that we also got to fight because that's the reason why I feel like we were such renegades because our whole thing is like we ain't looking like nobody, we ain't following nobody, we doing it alone.
That part.
And I think. At that time, that was taken as an attitude, you know what I mean? Like, the industry never really liked us. The industry never really liked OutKast because we never fit in. But we always beat everybody when it came to sell records. So we always understood that as long as we knew who we were and concentrated in art and spirit, then a street story, that only lasts so long.
Right.
But a traditional, real story lasts forever.
What you really know about the dirty side? It's just in it. It's embedded. It's embedded, man. Yeah, I love it, bro. I love it. I love it. What you got, Lace? I feel like you cooking something. You got a good one on you?
Yes.
What's up?
I want to ask you.
What?
I asked you this last time. After you answered that question about, about women in Atlanta and how it's like dating. The new woman now is dating is different.
Yeah.
What do you feel? Do you still feel the same thing after them folks went back and forth with you in them comments?
Yeah, I still feel the same. And I still feel the same. The reason why, and especially I feel the same now in this time of day. Like, man, if you young, man, get your money.
Right.
Understand who you is. Understand your life before you take on somebody else's life. Mm. And I'm only saying that because right now, I'm watching everybody get into their real professionalism a little bit later in age. Like, if you just look at the past rappers in the last 10 years, they ain't get in until they were 28, almost 30. Duh, you know what I mean? Everybody, you know, a lot of them was just getting Dolph. They was all turning 28, 29, 30, really understanding themselves. That's why their deals were better. That's why their music was better. And I feel like right now, dealing with a woman, you got to just know what you want. Like, men, they got paper. Sometimes we like dealing with the older woman, because she really, you learn a lot from them, you know, in a lot of ways,
yeah.
Older women, you know. I'm watching a lot of my guys, like a lot of people in the dungeon, we all had married older girls. All of us had older girls, everybody. The oldest was probably 5 years. Erica was older than Dre. Big girl was older than that. Mine was. So for me, my experience always been with an older woman that kind of like set the precedence of what it is. So it always made my pimping a little bit better, you know what I mean? Because I ain't had to worry about it. She got it, you know what I mean? So I only say that because I enjoy it. I never had a younger girl. I stopped dating younger girls in the ninth grade, you know what I mean? It was always older girls. So after that, I think my experience with younger girls these days is that you're going to run across women at a younger age with more money that you wouldn't have ran into in the 90s. So now you're going to run into the executive bra right now. She kind of, you know, she up on everything, the bags and all that. And then she'll meet a dude like me. I'd be like, man, I ain't buying none of that. I ain't doing this. I ain't doing that. I ain't going spending $400 at Mr. Child every night. Like, and then, like I said, too, it's like, it's what she wants. A lot of these girls feel like, since I got the money, I'm going to run the show. And I'm like, no, Charlotte, that ain't going to never happen. You know what I mean? So I'm just thinking that what's got to happen now is when you meet the one that you know smart enough to learn you, understand how to take when you're in your mood, and know how to create instances and times for y'all to really be able to talk y'all differences out. I think sometimes it'd be the wrong place. Like, it's the wrong place and time, so I'm like, I'm not about to go through this shit right now. You know what I mean?
My career, that's how I get.
But I'm like, shit, I'd rather for you to be like, look, Charlotte, we ain't been getting along. They just got them go up to the winery for the weekend, goddamn, sit up and get rubbed on, talk to each other. Okay. Now that's how I feel. Like, okay, well, shit, she really trying to work the situation out. Okay, I might just mess with you a little bit stronger than I was last week. You know what I mean? Because with men in this time of day, it's like everybody, we working to get to the perfect place every week. No relationship is going to be perfect. But I think sometimes women got to understand, we ain't got to fight right now. Because see, my father, he never argued with my mother. I used to watch my mama have to write notes and give to him. Cause he the kind of gonna shut down. Like, shit, fuck it then.
It is what it is. Yeah.
But he set a precedent though. Yeah. And that's who he was.
Yeah, but he was a military man. That's so it's like, shit, fuck it then. We ain't gotta argue about it, it is what it is. But she like, hey man, to work it out, we might can't talk. Well, I'm gonna write you another song. Maybe you can read it. Then he'll come back and be like, all right, you might have said some shit in there that was right. I might have been off chain a little bit, said some shit, can't take back. You know, men say stuff we can't take back. And that, a lot of time, women hold that. They hold all the shit that you be like, man, I thought you forgot about that shit. You still talking about that shit? That shit happened last year, my nigga.
I really think that go both ways.
Both ways.
Yeah. I think women matter of fact, I think women, I think women got more of that mouth at the chop at the mouth than a man will.
That's the problem. I never seen my mama argue at my father.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think in this time of day, you see more women arguing at men. And in them times of day, women they argue at men like that. Nowhere, not in public, nowhere. Like, we gonna have a spat, we gonna wait till we get
check this out. Remember, back in the day, a woman, and this is not condoning any kind of violence against a woman, I ain't never had none of that. But I know that back in the day, when a man in the 20s and 30s and 40s, a woman couldn't go to the police and say, hey, y'all, my man just slapped me and put me in my place. Or my man grabbed me and put, you can't do that. The police would have looked at you like, you about to get your ass hung.
Right.
Like, you don't come to me for that. So you eat that. She used to eat that. But now it's like, and that was a subservient energy that now it created a certain level of balance and peace that you ain't have her pop off at you even if she wanted to.
Well, I think that also the world we've been living in the past 5 years, I think that the world has been really pushed into a place where they wanted strong women. Strong women were being represented everywhere in society. And I think that the imbalance of it all is that it's like society, like we can make women strong, but we got to make men weak. And I think that's where a lot of relationships too are kind of rubbing against each other because it's almost like the women like this all day and the man like, shit, man, right, you can chill out sometime. Yeah. I mean, like, we can have an argument, but you ain't got to be standing over me like this here. Like, you just want to square up. And most women right now, that's how they deal with me.
That's how they think.
That's how they deal.
Well, they do that in their defense because a lot of men got their coochie out. So a lot of men are walking around feminine, so it put them in a masculine position. They in fight or flight, and I'm not condoning it. I do.
You grew up in your era, that's why. Because a lot of men, it's like they don't have common sense, and it's a lot of times it's like
ain't common.
It's not common, and a lot of times it's like if you're not gonna do it, I'm gonna get up and do it because I don't have time to sit here and wait. I don't know. Tomorrow's not promised, and if you're, but I'm also I don't believe in this whole like argument unless you have a solution to propose. There's no point for me to go off on you. There's no point. You know, I've learned that very early on. I come here and say, listen, this is how I feel. You know, you can validate my feelings or not, but don't, you know, tell me I feel wrong because the way I feel, where you feel, you feel, right? Yeah. So now let's come to a solution. And I like the idea of writing notes. I like the idea of like communicating that way because not everybody can communicate with their mouth.
Right.
And I'm one of those people that sometimes it's going to be hard for me to express it. But I can sit down and write it. And I've done it before in relationships where I'd write a letter and I'd be like, here, this is what's going on. But like, it comes from love. It doesn't come from me attacking you.
Right.
So I think it's like people need to learn themselves. Like you said, get your money, get to know yourself because it's fast paced now. We're like people have ADHD. More people have ADHD than they probably know it. It's too much, but they don't know themselves. They don't know what they want. They're not grounded. Like they don't know how to just sit down and be like, okay, this is what I want and this is what I feel.
Before you get your money, I think you should get your mission. A lot of people can get money, but if they're not connected to a mission, that then you lose. The money will distract you. Because see, like, a lot of people are chasing paper, but they don't understand how to embody their purpose. Because you can get the paper and you be lost. We done seen so many people get the money. And I think, you know, when you're embodying your purpose, the money gonna come. So, and then the right people that's supposed to be connected to are going to follow that. I love writing it down because as an author, in my book, I say the prefix to the word authority is author. When you author something, you give it authority to come to pass. But it's like, if you want authority in your relationship, that's a way you can get it. Write it down, write the vision down, make it plain. That's a verse.
I think it's also, I have conversations with my girlfriends about that too. I always explain to them, men are human. They have feelings. They have emotions. They can't. I think it's this like societal narrative that men are supposed to be so strong, but you can be weak. You can cry. You can smile. You can feel too. And so it's always like, especially when girls come from this like, whew, but if anybody is going to come attacking you, you're going to be defensive no matter what, man or woman. That's just how it's going to be. And so a lot of times I'm just like, just sometimes reach out. Men doesn't always have to reach out. Like reach out, say, I miss you. Say, I love you. Because that's like, I don't know, it's just like a sign of I care.
Reassurance.
It's a reassurance. But people are scared to love. And I think that's the bigger issue than men or women.
Right shit. It's like sometimes y'all get into y'all thing like, I hit you at 12, you ain't pick up the phone. Then by 8:30, 10 o'clock, y'all be like, fuck it then. You ain't call, you ain't did shit. I said, well, why you didn't call in all that time that you could have called before you called me talking crazy? You could have called and said, hey, bro, you straight?
Yeah,
at 3 o'clock,
good.
4 o'clock. But you waited to 10 o'clock. So now your assumption that turned into a whole, oh, he had the party with the old man. He got the party. He doing something totally different. When I ain't did, I probably ain't left the yard.
Right.
And that's the problem sometimes. It's like, it's almost like if they call you, you miss the call and then they wait for you. They be like, shit.
No, I think that men just need to be more vulnerable too.
Well, we do be vulnerable.
Because it just seems sneaky anyway. Because think about
it.
If I'm going up your store. You telling something. I'm the person that's going to hold you to your word. You telling me you're going to call me at 2. And then it's 8 o'clock at night. I still ain't heard from you. I'm going to wonder. It don't matter what it is. I'm still going to wonder because why you just couldn't call? Why I got to reassure you to do something you should have been doing anyway?
I was busy. The phone kept ringing. These folks kept calling me. I was on the FaceTime. I ain't checked my text. 2-3 hours go by then. All I'm saying is you still waited till you in turn hot red to call me now. Now it's an argument.
I think it's a communication.
Yeah, you could have communicated that.
I think it's always about communication, right? Like some people are not good with their phones, you know, or you can just. So here's the thing. Every person, you, me, him, her, we all got patterns. right? Yep. If you do that multiple times, like, oh man, he's just in the yard doing whatever. But like, sometimes people are like, I'll call you back. And it's my biggest pet peeve when they promise to call me back and they don't call me. Don't say that. Do not let the word out of your mouth that you're going to call me back. Just don't say it. Just say, hey, bye. You know, but it's a communication thing. And if you explain to people, hey, listen, if I don't respond to you, it does not mean that I'm going and, you know, messing with somebody else or I'm doing something shady. That's not what it is. I'm just busy or I'm in my own space. Don't go crazy. Because it's like, it's reassurance and it's comfort, right?
Fellas, ladies say, let your yes be your yes and your no be your no. That's what they're saying. Now, when we do that, don't get mad.
Same with girls, though, too, because girls be shady as hell, too.
Oh, like, y'all the sneakiest on the planet.
We
it's Adam and Eve. Because the prefix to Eve is evil and evening. Darkness.
Y'all do this.
And the boomerang is going to be with cheers outside, you know?
They call you one of the sneakiest animals is a cat. And I won't say sneaky, but they move in that way. And that's why women are referred to as the cats. That's real. Am I lying?
That's true.
I mean, that's
that. I mean, you always.
I'm just saying because I go to nature. I speak nature because that's an easy way for people to grasp what I'm talking about.
But why would you?
So it's the characteristics.
What is the conclusion that says that women are more sneakier than men?
I'm just saying y'all pay. I'm gonna tell you, women pay attention more to detail than a man.
That part.
That's why. That's why y'all sneakier.
It's not even sneakier. We move smarter.
Well, y'all sneakier. You don't move smarter. All the time.
Y'all gonna get caught like this. Women might not ever get caught.
I used to say this. I used to say that the dullest woman is sharper than the sharpest man. I used to say that until I kept living a life.
But you learned because that was your experience. You had to go through
and
it.
And then, and as I kept getting more convicted in who I was, then I started to say, no, it's not about that. It's about you being able to attract who you are. I go back to this all the time. If you arguing with somebody and they arguing with you, that's a reflection of where you're at.
Absolutely. No, period. I agree with that.
You know what I'm saying? And like, as soon as we start saying it's not their fault, and I'm looking at the three fingers coming back to me and it's my fault that I'm in this situation, then now you can move some things. But nothing changes until something changes.
But that's what I'm saying. You know, and I said that on my podcast too, the hardest thing is to look in the mirror and look into your own eyes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because that's how you would know. And there's like a whole meditation about it. Can you look into your eyes for a certain amount of time? Because you're going to start seeing things.
Yep.
And a lot of times people are going to be like, they, them, this, that. No. Okay, why am I in this position? Why am I in this situation? Why am I dating those people? Why am I in this and that? Because you're speaking from your perspective. I'm speaking from a general perspective. I think women in general are more sneaky than men, and they can get away.
I'm speaking from general, too. Yeah. I'm speaking from general, but that's also just been my experience.
Yeah. No,
my every man's mother tell them, baby, watch out for them sneaky-ass women, and I got that from a woman. So I had it officially. Every man.
My daddy did y'all watch out for them men?
Okay. No, your daddy said he was a dog. I'm a dog. Don't rush. What that song is?
I don't know.
That, y'all know that song that's out there, everybody. You know, take your time. Don't rush. You know that song. But he telling you what it is.
But I think it all comes down to, it doesn't matter the gender. If you don't know who you are and if you don't have intention that you're going to move within your purpose, then it doesn't matter. It can be.
It doesn't. You're right. Because spirit is spirit. There's just certain qualities of gender that defines what that energy is going to do prominently. Right. Like at the end of the day, there's no way that the lion is going to hunt better than the lioness. That's just not what he does. You know what I'm saying? That's facts.
Conclusion is find a solution. Don't always.
Well, the solution is in. It's always an inside job. I keep saying that. Yeah. Everything goes back to you. It's not anybody else's fault.
Yeah.
You don't like the seasons that you in your life, change it. It's period.
I feel you on that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think that was great.
I think we need to dive into these questions.
Yeah, I think so too. So we're about to play a game called The Game.
Wow, creative. You came up with that?
Straight to the point.
Okay, straight to the point. You're going to reach in there, you're going to pull it to the left. The person on your left has to read it.
Pull it to the left.
If you could go back and talk to your teenage self, what advice would you give?
Oh, if I go back and talk to my teenage self, I'd tell myself to keep my anger level down, stay patient, and network a little bit more. You know what I mean? Be more personable. Talk to people a little bit more. Because I never used to talk to people. I just had this mind frame of, I'm going to go in here. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to kill. I'm going to give my money. I'm going to be gone. But it ain't like that. It's more so like you got, when you dealing with these NBA level type people, they want to know who you are, where you from, what you know, how smart you are. They want to talk to you. You know what I mean? They want to get to know you. And I didn't know that at first. So if I go back and talk to my teenage self, I keep my anger down. I'd be more personable and I network a little bit more, you know, especially on the NBA level when you're talking about these owners and you're talking about the GMs and the coaches and all of that. I'd be a little bit more personable. I wouldn't be so to myself.
That's dope. That's good advice.
Let's see what we have here. It says, if you could witness any historical event.
Yes.
No, we didn't ask that.
Yes, he did. He
no, we didn't. We said anybody in history. But this one, it says, if you could witness any historical event, which one would you choose? That's pretty dope, actually.
You got a bunch of 9/11, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, John F. Kennedy.
My boy Trump getting
probably,
it off.
Probably Trump being the president.
Wow.
Because I just feel like if he could be president, anybody could be president.
You witnessed that, though.
Right. He went to jail, came out, took his mugshot, and then went to go be president.
Okay.
I think I would want to be in the White House. Like, how did this happen?
I mean,
like, let me follow this man. How did this happen?
Because they showed you this. It's not the land of the free, home of the brave.
No, I wanted to be there, though. I wanted to see his everyday life, what he do. How did this man become president? Who did he pay? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to see that.
All right.
I want to walk with him on a good shoulder.
That's what's up.
On a good shoulder.
You yield? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. How has a past relationship shaped your current view of love?
How has past relationship shaped my current view of love?
I love this one.
I just think that love is something that's emotional to me. I don't think love is as important as respect and authenticity. So I think authenticity and respect is more important than love, because I think you could lose love for somebody, but if you have respect for them, that's more powerful. So my past relationships has brought me to that conclusion.
You know what? That's actually so real.
Don't tell him how real that is.
No, it is. It's very real, because I felt the same way. I remember when I stopped loving somebody, it's because I started disrespecting them. Like, I lost my respect for that person. I just could not. I was like, I have no respect for you whatsoever.
He said, I can't.
I can't make this up.
Interesting.
Let me see. Do you consider your parents' relationship to be a healthy one?
Oh, hell no.
Right.
Okay, that was a very easy question, because my mom thought she was never going to get married. And then she got connected with my dad by her coach, because my mom was a basketball player. My dad was a handball player, which is like a sport in Europe. And she had to marry him because society told her to marry him. And she got pregnant with my brother. And so they had to get married. And then I wasn't even supposed to happen, because everybody told my mom to have an abortion and divorce my dad. And it was like, it's probably like the most hurtful thing that ever happened to me as a person. And then my mom ended up cheating on my dad. And then my dad was like pretending like he didn't know about this for years and years on end. Like, we were literally, he even met the guy multiple times. But it's just, it's like, it's so messed up that I'm not mad at it, but I just didn't know how painful and hurtful it was until I got into therapy and like started learning myself. And I was like, wow, that's why relationships like didn't mean shit to me, because I was like, this is just, if that's what people are going to do to each other and that's family, then what's next? Like, that's, yeah.
That makes sense.
I know people look at me, they think I'm like, just like this bubbly, like girl that just like, you know, has everything easy in life. I was like, no, honey, I've been through it.
Yep, your turn.
What I do?
You got to give it to him.
In this eight.
Well, look at you.
What's this?
What's the wildest thing you've done that no one knows about?
Tell the truth now.
Oh, boy.
So many.
That's one thing, though, one that nobody know about. This would be your first time.
I think I think the first time, and this just me being in this situation. The first time Gip was invited to the Bahamas with Dallas, Chili, Lenny Kravitz, Billy Corgan, and I had Joy with me. And who was the guy that played the villain in Blade? Remember the cool little white kid that was.
I know you're talking about. I don't know his name, but I know you're talking about.
I met him, and that was the first time that I was able to sit around some real rock stars. And the more I listened to them talk, it was almost like they were sad that they became rock stars.
Right.
It was like that was a thing to me as an artist, because you sitting there, you like, damn, this Billy Corgan, this smashing pumpkin, man, he was so mean, man. And then he'd be like, man, I started making money and shit got boring. And I learned, like, from that instance and that situation that even though you could be on $1 million yachts and have helicopters and have houses everywhere, you still, as an artist, could find a place of unsatisfaction, because now it's harder to be you when everybody know you.
Right. Mm. Like, you got to put on a facade.
It's almost like when you was the normal guy in the McDonald's and didn't nobody know you, it was easier to look at society and write a song. But once you become a star in society's eyes, it's hard for you to detach yourself from your reality.
That's heavy as fuck.
And put yourself back in those dirty jeans and them first shoes you had on. It's like, that's the hard part of being an artist, because sometimes you wake up and be like, damn, man, I just wish I could start over.
Mm. Bro, do you think that's why most musicians' music fall off?
Yeah, because they get once you see that it's a business, the passion of it leaves, because now when it first begin, it's almost like you got all the time in the world. But then once you get to this money and these timelines, now it's a business, and it's about you being, you know, on time. And art and artistry was never about being on time and drawing inside of the box.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes an artist, and it could make an athlete too get to a place of, it ain't even about this no more. It's about me being the star, more about me playing the game.
Right.
And that's the part that'll make an artist sad and be like, well, shit, man, you know what? I just get out your way.
Yeah, for real.
You know what I mean? And that's the real shit that it kind of taught me, like, you got to love this for yourself, because if you don't, it's going to destroy you mentally.
Hey, man, I don't even know if we need to. I don't even think we that. That's one where you dropped the mic right there, bro. That shit was so heavy. That was real, bro. Lex, let's tell the people about our sponsors, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was soaking in. Okay. We at the Reality Table want to thank our sponsors. Sponsored 4 episodes for us today, so I think we need to be gracious and grateful for that. Denton CPA, if you need a CPA, he's located in Marietta. Kennesaw, DM the Reality Table. Look him up on Facebook, Denton CPA. House of Elysium, this is our home for the Reality Table now. We're going to have some parties, a lot of events going on this summer, hosting, viewing, watch parties, you name it, it's here. And then we're going to do a special thank you to Mr. B. Valentine from Chicago. The name of his sauce is Press Charles 1923 Hot Sauce. Authenticity. I said it right.
You did. That's the word of the day.
Word of the day. Over marketability everywhere from Chi-Town. So we want to thank everybody here. But this, before we go, we always say, if you could tell anybody in the world something, one thing, what would you tell them?
And then tell them how to find you, too.
Yeah.
Shit, man. Ain't no tomorrow without the day. And you gotta find me. You can find guilt anywhere, man. Guilt goodies, man. Just look, it's only one. It's only one. It's only one. And it's the real name. Swear to God.
Same to you, Les.
I would say love yourself, and there's no such thing as perfect. Mm. But remember, you always have to take a first step. And another thing I'll tell you, this is something that happened to me today. My friend called me. She's like, I don't know how to ask this question. I said, just ask the goddamn question.
Right.
So don't be scared to ask the question, because you never know what door is going to open for you or what room you're going to walk into.
No, I'm going to ask questions.
Ask questions. But a lot of people are scared. So that's why I ask. Always ask. And it's okay. Even if you seem like a beggar, it's okay. It's completely fine.
And then tell us how to find you, and then tell us about your podcast.
All right. You can find me at Courtside Less on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Courtside Less. Yeah, because tennis courtside. But you know what? I love being courtside regardless.
Basketball games, courtside. Of course.
That's that origin, courtside. Courtside Less on all social medias. And then my show is called Talk Less Show. So that's my podcast. It's on YouTube and it's also on Instagram. So just tune in, Talk Less Show.
I say Stevie Bags Jr. on all platforms. StevieBaggsJr. And I'm like, yo, I'm the only Bags out there. And it's my real name. I ain't make that up. And then I would say, if you take the M off of masses, it's asses. So stop following the masses.
Bless well.
Far.
They just come effortlessly.
I'll say just, man, stay your authentic self. Set goals. And have tunnel vision on what you're trying to accomplish, man. Don't let nothing and nobody get in your way. Do what you got to do. Handle your business. So make sure you straight so you can make sure everybody else straight, man. You can find me at _Shannon_Brown_. Type in Shannon Brown. It's going to pop up.
I would say keep your faith. No matter what you believe in, keep your faith and just know that, you know, wherever you want to be or wherever you want to go, you can go. Just put the work behind it. You can find me on Instagram, AlexiaAdams24. It's for the little Lex 24. It's going to change. The Reality Table on Instagram, The Reality Table on YouTube, The Reality Table on Facebook, Lex Enterprises LLC to connect. Yeah, man. That's it.
Look, y'all, subscribe, follow, show love to the page and to the content. We appreciate it, man. Reality Table, peace and power. We out of the
vibes.
Let's shout and mix the pain with the passion. Yeah. Shout it to this trip by accident. Yeah. She just fell in love, think it's magic. Voila. Hey. Anything you want, I made it happen. Learn from the past, left it.